Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we are here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about a thing called blind spots. I was telling you about this a bit before. Revisiting pop culture classics that we missed. Meaning, you know, there's always that movie that when you say you haven't seen it, people go, "What?" Or a television show that you say you never watched, and they can't believe it. Or a band that you've never heard of, that kind of stuff. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got a Blackhawks Express to play a little bit later as well. But right now, it is Thursday, and it's been a couple of weeks since we've had Dan Feinberg on. I was off last week, so we didn't have him on. So we're having him on now. Dan Feinberg is TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and he joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about, and let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick. Glad to have you back.
Yes, I'm glad to be back. Before we get into some of the stuff that you've been writing about and a lot of the TV and stuff, how are you doing on your DVR?
It is the funniest thing. If you were to look at my DVR, there is no rhyme or reason to the shows that I am caught up on versus the shows that I'm now 4 or 5 weeks behind on, because it sort of piles up.
Right.
I'm caught up on most of the comedies I DVR, but that's not the same as most of the comedies I watch, because there are shows that I don't DVR that I still watch in different forms. Like, for example, I know you've been enjoying this season of Crashing, and
oh, yeah.
I have not watched any of it yet because it's not on my DVR, so I have to actually go to HBO Go or whatever if I want to watch it. So the answer is I've made some progress in weird ways and no progress at all in others. This is going to set me back a year, I think, having basically missed TV in January. It's a weird state of affairs.
And, you know, and then it's all just going to come back again because you're going to have another conference to go to, and then it's just this going to be this perpetual insanity.
I think probably I dig myself a little bit deeper each time. So far, I have not deleted any series as a result of just giving up on them because of missing
right. January
and just figuring I'm too far behind, but
right. It's
going to happen eventually. There, again, it's all triage, and so far I'm doing a very poor job.
Okay, I enjoy Crashing, this season in particular I think has been better than the first season, and the last episode, which I'm sure you've heard about, the Artie Lang episode, was heartbreaking and really great.
I've heard this, and yet I have not watched any of this season's episodes of that yet. On the other hand, in contrast, I am fully caught up on Celebrity Big Brother. So, like I said, it is a disaster. The things I'm caught up on versus things I'm not.
I did not watch last night's Celebrity Big Brother. I will watch it when I get home in the morning. So I don't want to know anything that happened if you're all caught up. But it's ridiculous. I mean, I didn't expect it to not be, you know. One of your tweets that just cracked me up was about Meta World Peace, who I found to be the most entertaining of the celebrities, simply because of what you tweeted, which was he doesn't understand any of the rules. He'd never seen an episode of Big Brother before.
At the beginning, it was remarkable. Like, no one decided to tell him, for example, how you vote on Big Brother, or or what you're supposed to do with the cameras on you, or any number of things. I don't think he knew what the power of veto was.
Right.
He didn't know anything. And it was amusing to watch. On the other hand, he came across as wonderfully, endearingly childlike.
Right.
In a season of pretty awful people, that gives him so much of an advantage over everyone else.
Yeah, no, he was the only one that made me laugh out of anybody in the house, and it was because of that. Like, I have no idea what's going on. Even at the end when Julie is interviewing him after he didn't understand the veto. Like, when she was interviewing, he still didn't understand it. I don't know. I just found that really endearing and really funny.
The season has been very strange. The amorosiness of it has been strange and unpleasant. And at a certain point, you know, I hate her and would like for her to lose. But at a certain point, if they didn't vote her out the first couple times they had the opportunity, and admittedly she got breaks from the producers and all of that.
Yeah.
At a certain point, if you let her stick around too long, you all deserve to lose to her, and American society deserves Omarosa as a celebrity Big Brother champion. She's the Big Brother champion we deserve.
Right. You know, it's funny because when I started watching the show, half of the people in the house, I have no idea who they are. Like I don't even know the beauty queen who Steve Harvey mistakenly crowned. I don't know who she is. I have no idea.
Ariadna.
Yeah. I mean, she's fine to watch. She's entertaining to watch in the house. I don't watch the Real Housewives of anything, so I don't know who the other Brandy is. I don't know who that is.
That would be Brandy Granville. I do not know her either, except for in a vague sense, but I don't know her personality.
The boy band veteran guy, the smart ass guy, James, I don't know. I have no idea.
Not at all.
Nothing. The girl from Hairspray, I only know because she was in Hairspray. Other than that,
what more reason would? I mean, it's her Tony winning role. Right. What other reason could you have for wanting to know her?
So, but the only ones that I know. Well, I mean, Shannon Elizabeth got kicked out. And I knew Chuck Liddell. I know Mark McGrath and Ross Matthews. That's pretty much it. And I think I like, now that Meta's gone, I think I like Mark McGrath the best out of everybody in the house.
Mark McGrath, and I've interviewed him a couple times. Have you ever interviewed him? He is so. He's both obsequious, but so utterly charming and likable as a person. It makes you feel awful how likable he is, because you wanted to dislike him because of Sugar Ray and any other reason. He is so totally likable that if he were to win, again, that's another thing that would probably serve everyone right, since he was basically a floater for the first 3 weeks of the season. I'm amazed I've stuck with it the entire time. I really thought I was going to watch one episode and run screaming, and instead I keep watching it every week. And once again, I am caught up on that, and not caught up.
And you've not seen the Artie Lang episode of Crashing.
I could go on. It's like 50 things that I haven't seen that are so very much clearly better, and yet. Oh, I've got all my Big Brother episodes in.
Okay, well, you got to have priorities. Are you caught up on Baskets?
I am caught up on Baskets. See, every once in a while, I'm sure you'll be able to find the things I'm caught up on that are good things. But I am totally caught up on Baskets, and the past couple episodes have been just terrific.
Yeah.
The opera rodeo episode was phenomenal.
Yeah.
The past week, I mean, I think we have now, and we talked about this last season, I think we have completely passed the point at which it's a discussion of whether Louis Anderson deserves to be viewed as a lead actor on the show.
Yeah.
I think if they campaign him as supporting again, it's category fraud at this point. The show is Christine Baskett's show at this moment.
No question about it. Every episode revolves around her, and this last episode was heartbreaking. And, you know, and in that great way that Baskets can be both weirdly funny and heartbreaking, you know, with Peter Jason coming back. And, you know, everything that happened with the rodeo and the dynamic between the family now, it's just so good. It's just so, so good. And it gets richer and better with every episode. And again, Louis Anderson, amazing work and an amazing character.
I hope that they honestly do treat it genuinely, and that they do submit him as lead, that they don't just keep going supporting because that's where he started. Because I think it's respectful to how the show has shaped around him to acknowledge that even if there are two Zach Galifianakis, the show at this point has become Louis Anderson's show, and it's a better show for it.
I agree. And all that stuff between her friends, the card game and all the stuff at church. Oh, just amazing. And I also like what's going on with Chip this season is too, because, you know, I mean, he was much more of a buffoon in the first season, and I mean, he's still a goofball this season, but he's like sort of this really empathetic character, or Dale obviously is like the cartoon villain of the piece, but Chip has become a much more interesting character as well.
There's just a, again, as with everything on the show, there's a vein of sadness to everything he's doing at this point, and just simply not having his place. And it looks as if next week's episode, which apparently features lots of clunes, lots of French clunes, is going to be a good one for him. So I'm looking forward to that in the way that I look forward to Baskets every week.
Yeah.
That is a show that I'm caught up on because it's too good not for me.
Exactly. I agree with you. It's just, it's great. And this season has been great. Well, did you watch the first season of Divorce?
I did not finish the first season of Divorce, but that's another one that I hear has been better this season.
Yeah, it is better this season. It's become another thing is that it's become a magnificent showcase for Molly Shannon, who is just great. And I love Molly Shannon. She's one of my favorite people on the planet. And this has become like a really wonderful showcase for Molly Shannon, and another supporting character that's jumped up a notch from the previous seasons.
I'll catch up on that, someday, when I have the time, Nick. When I have the time.
But you're all caught up. It's because, as you've said before, you're all caught up on the sitcom stuff because it's like 20 minutes and you're out.
Exactly. Those are easy. So all my network stuff, all of the ABC comedies that I really enjoy, all the NBC comedies I enjoy, the random Fox things that I enjoy to varying degrees, like Fred Armisen's appearance on Last Man on Earth, I'm caught up on that. It's a lot of the premium stuff and the streaming stuff that where even that's kind of erratic. Like, I decided last weekend that I was going to watch about half of the second season of Love so that I could be ready for the third and final season. So now I'm getting closer to caught up on Love. But again, I don't know what points I get for that because there's so much other stuff going on that you just can't keep up.
Yeah, and Love comes out in a couple of weeks, season three. Yeah, I was sad to hear that that's going to be the final season. I mean, I can understand why, you know, in terms of like story arc, I can understand it. But I really love that show, and I was just sad to hear that it was the final season.
I think that Netflix is starting to make shows finite, which they didn't used to be, and that to me definitely does feel like a show that probably doesn't want to overstay.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's the kind of show where it could get annoying in a hurry, and I was amazed that the first season remained on my good sides for the entire first season, and I'm halfway through the second season, and I continue to enjoy it and to particularly love Gillian Anderson, mm-hmm. et cetera, but not Gillian Jacobs. Gillian Anderson, too. But
Gillian Jacobs. I didn't even correct you on that. I was like, yeah, two different people.
One is Gillian and one is Jillian.
Right, exactly.
Two different people entirely. But, yeah, so, no, I'm enjoying it, and I figure I'll be caught up with that by the time the third season comes. And then I did do Are You Done With One Day at a Time?
I am.
Okay, as am I. So caught up there. That was beautiful.
Wonderful.
So.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, Dan, hang on a second. We got to take a break, okay?
For sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're playing catch up. He was way behind on his DVR, and he still is. So having a hard time prioritizing, but he'll figure it out. All right, when we come back, we got a lot of TV to talk about, and it's Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, we'll take a break for the news and be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday. All right. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are here on WGN, and coming up a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about blind spots in pop culture. Things that you missed. Things that we missed. Like, you're at a party and someone says, oh, I've never seen The Godfather. And you go, what? That kind of thing, like cornerstones in entertainment and pop culture that you have not seen or heard or are aware of. 312-981-7200. That's coming up later on in the show. But right now, Dan Feinberg is with us for his biweekly visit. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we are here to talk more TV. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. I am very, very curious, considering who is in the cast for this Hulu limited series called The Looming Tower. Tell us all about that.
Yes, The Looming Tower premieres, I believe, next Wednesday, I think. And it's based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonfiction book basically about the mistakes, oversights, distractions, etc., that caused the FBI and CIA to be investigating and following and tracking Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda basically from the early to mid-90s, leading up through the Kenyan embassy bombing in 1998, and then still somehow allowed or were unable to prevent the events of September 11th, 2001. And so it's a horror story. It's this awful thing that you know is coming, and it's unavoidable. So far, I've only seen the first three episodes. It was created by Lawrence Wright, who wrote the book, with Dan Futterman, who wrote Capote and a few other things, also is a veteran character actor who many people will recognize, and Alex Gibney, Oscar-winning documentary filmmaker, who has begun pushing into scripted fare a little bit more lately. And the way I described it in my review is that it's kind of like the very, very professional, maybe not great, but fantastically cast, sturdy and smart HBO miniseries and original movies that maybe HBO does not make quite so often these days. It has a tremendous cast, including Jeff Daniels, who plays John O'Neill, who was one of the FBI men on the case. Peter Sarsgaard plays Martin Schmidt, who was part of the CIA team. The supporting cast includes Michael Stuhlbarg, Bill Camp, who people will remember from The Night Of. If you keep watching for a few episodes, people like Alec Baldwin pop up, playing former CIA head George Tenet. It's just a great cast. There's really nobody who has the big showy role that you figure is going to dominate the Emmys, though I feel as if probably Daniels and Sarsgaard are the quote-unquote leads and are the people likely to be in Emmy conversations. But it feels like an ensemble of hardworking, somewhat self-destructive, ego-driven men who were doing the best they could, and it wasn't enough. And it's a tragedy, and it's fairly smart. It's fairly well made. And having seen three episodes, if Hulu had given me seven more, I would have probably binged them all quick. Like, it's good. It's not great, but it's really good. It's really watchable.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. Now, how are they streaming this one? Are they doing it once a week?
They're doing it once a week. I don't know if this is one of the ones that they're doing with like three at the top in the Handmaid's Tale kind of way, but it is going to be every week. It's not a drop of the entire series, which they've done once or twice, but mostly Hulu prefers to keep things weekly, and it worked well, obviously, for Handmaid's Tale and its Emmy chances, and I think probably this one is timed so that it will run for 2.5 months, and then it'll still be fresh in people's mind when they vote for Emmy stuff in the early summer. So I think that's the strategy on this, and I think it will work reasonably well. It's I described it also as being basically feeling a lot like a Homeland season, and probably better than the current season of Homeland that's airing on Showtime. So
okay, and when does it begin airing?
It begins airing next Wednesday, which is February 28th, or next Tuesday, which is February 28th. Whatever February 28th is, that's when it's airing.
Okay.
Premieres, rather.
Okay. So that's The Looming Tower on Hulu. What a cast. I mean, that's just, it's incredible.
It's amazing. And there, some of them are in kind of, you have Michael Stuhlbarg wearing a little bit of a sort of white hair wig. But for the most part, people look like themselves. Peter Sarsgaard has a beard. Jeff Daniels looks like Jeff Daniels. It's not one of those elaborate people are trying to look like really famous people things, like the various HBO election things, like recount and, those where you're sort of somewhat distracted by, okay, how are they going to make ... look like ...
Right.
And there's, John O'Neill was a semi-public figure, and it's easy to find pictures of him and to see that he looks not hugely like Jeff Daniels, but enough. But you aren't distracted by that. I don't think enough people have their mental image of Richard Clark in their head to go, oh, Michael Stuhlbarg looks rather shockingly like him a little bit. And that's nice that you don't have to be distracted. It can just be actors in an ensemble doing ensemble work.
Okay. All right. That's The Looming Tower, premiering on the 28th, which is a Tuesday, I believe. No, a Wednesday. It's a Wednesday.
Oh, it's Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday. What the hell is wrong with me? Okay.
Oh, trust me, I understand. It's all a blur.
All right. Tell us about 7 Seconds. And this is from the creator of The Killing, which is a show that I loved.
And did you love the entire show? Like, did you wax and wane? I definitely remember that you loved the third season, which was the one with the kids. Which was sort of the show's bounce back after kind of a stumble of a third season.
The third season by far was the best. But I love the season with Sarsgaard.
That was the Netflix season, the last one, right?
Yeah, yeah, I love that season too, where Sarsgaard was on death row. I thought that was a pretty stunning work right there.
That was a great performance, and I had completely and totally forgotten that happened. Lots of that show kind of went into a dark hole after they saw Two killed Rosie Larson, and then I remembered the season with the kids. That was a good season, particularly because it was marvelously cast.
Yeah.
Seven Seconds brings back Vina Sood, who did create and ran The Killing through its entire time, and I think that it should appeal to people who stuck with The Killing the entire time and maybe didn't fall out of it. There were a lot of viewers who just got sick of kind of how somber that show consistently was and how it became at times kind of exhausting to watch. And I think 7 Seconds is a little bit like that. It's a 10-episode thing that is being rather confusingly described as a crime drama anthology, which I think is just Netflix's way of saying that it's one case for a season. And the case begins right at the beginning of the pilot. A cop is distracted as he drives to the hospital where his pregnant wife has been taken, and he hits a young boy on a bicycle, and his narcotics team gathers around and says that there's no way that in this particular climate anyone is going to accept that a white cop killing an African-American teen could possibly be an accident. And therefore, if they want to save the city from a racial uprising, they need to cover it up and walk away, basically. But of course, you can't walk away. And soon there's a detective and a prosecutor investigating the case, and it progresses from there. The cast includes Regina King, who plays the mother of the young boy who's hit by the car, Michael Mosley, who some people will remember from the strange ghost season of Scrubs that aired after most of the major characters left. He plays the detective, the homicide detective on the case, whose nickname is Fish. There are a bunch of other fairly recognizable actors. Gretchen Mol shows up towards the end of the first season as an attorney, and it's a really dark show. It's a dark show that changes what it is almost on a weekly basis. I found just enough kind of intriguing and gripping about it to keep watching it through the end. I've seen all 10 episodes. I don't know that I recommend it highly, but it has things that I liked about it. So if people latch onto those things, I can see how it would carry people through.
Okay. And tonally, it's similar to The Killing then?
It's very similar and very dark. Basically, it's The Killing in Jersey City. So instead of rain, it's snow. But everybody is still bundled up. Everybody's still walking around looking uncomfortable and miserable. Everything is still gray and somber. And you, again, have these two investigators, each haunted by personal demons. The Michael Mosley character, Fish, is sort of a little bit more wisecracking in the vein of Upholder from The Killing. But there's a character who's dealing with a custody issue. There's also a subplot involving kind of wastrel teens addicted to heroin and living on the streets. And so that's going to feel obviously very much like the third season of The Killing. It really does feel to some degree like Vina Sood playing her greatest hits. The directors on the series are very, very good. The second episode was directed by Jonathan Demme, and I believe I believe it will be his last credit. So there's that.
Wow.
He directed multiple episodes of The Killing as well.
I know. I just didn't realize that he still had work out there.
Yeah, I think this is it. I think it's worth seeing for that. But even beyond that, it's a bunch of great cable directors who worked on all the HBO dramas. People like Ed Bianchi, who people will recognize his name from Sopranos episodes and a lot of the HBO stuff. The pilot was directed by Warrior director Gavin O'Connor, and he does a decent job with it. He does fairly well with New York City production. So, and with that area, this is Jersey City, not New York City, but it's good looking in that sort of dark and gloomy and somber gray way. I did find it a little monotonous. I did find that it was also way long. Like, this is one where Netflix put no barriers on anything, and so the last half of the season, every episode is over an hour. The finale is over 79 minutes, I think.
Wow.
Which is the kind of thing where if you're a TV critic and you have a schedule and you're trying to fit things in and you see that the episode you're about to watch is 79 minutes, there's a certain wincing factor that kicks in at that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I plugged through the whole thing. I never at any point felt like I was going to quit. So I watched all 10 episodes. It does have a season arc that wraps up. So even if there isn't a second season, and unclear if that's what the anthology thing means, that they're going to move on.
Right.
You won't feel as if you've only seen a partial story. This is not a Who Killed Rosie Larson. We won't reveal it at the end of the first season.
Right.
Also, it's a whodunit where you know who did it and what they did in the first scene of the entire season. So that's a relief.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV to talk about right after we take this break on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, talk and text, and Triple Play Thursday requests. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he joins us biweekly to talk TV. And we're going to get back to that TV conversation right now. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Have you been watching the late night shows and how they've been handling, obviously, all the stuff that's been happening?
Only bits and pieces. I've watched, let's see, I definitely have been watching The Daily Show every night, and The Daily Show has done good stuff, but it was off last week, so we've kind of had to jump in late.
Yeah. There's a very funny. I watch The Daily Show too. I watch it daily. In fact,
that's the right way to watch.
And Roy Wood Jr., who I think is hilarious. Did you see the bit that he did on Black Panther?
Yes, I did.
It just totally cracked me up. I mean, I think he's very funny, and I just thought that piece was just the way he did it. It was very, very funny, and the interaction between him and Trevor is always funny. So that was kind of a highlight so far this week.
I thought he was good. Let's see. I was very happy with the triumphant return of John Oliver over the weekend.
I missed that. I haven't watched that yet.
It was a very good return. Boy, they took a long time off.
Yeah, they did.
Not for me to tell people they're not entitled to take a vacation. Everyone's entitled to a little downtime, but they took a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
So, but it's a very good return for him. Let's see. The other night, I even watched an episode of The Opposition with Jordan Klepler because I wanted to see how he handled the interview he was doing with two of the students from the Florida school.
Yeah, that's the only segment I've watched of that show because it's just not my cup of tea. I've tried watching it and I just don't do it. But I did watch. I for the same reason you did. I was curious as to how he was going to handle it.
And he handled it reasonably well. They handled it fantastically.
Yes, they did.
You know, for heaven's sakes, the whole thing with them, over and over again, I've been thinking, my God, I can't believe their composure and their maturity.
Amazing.
And how they're handling this.
Amazing.
But to be in that position and to have to figure out the tone that your interviewer is setting and to have to play along to some degree with whatever the strange game is that Jordan Klepler's playing that I don't think he's really nailing quite yet.
Yeah.
I give those two young women a tremendous amount of credit.
Absolutely.
Thought they did a great job in that sector.
I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. I just can't get a handle on the opposition. And like you said, I don't think Jordan has a handle on it either.
No, I don't think they know. I think they started off with something that was more Alex Jonesy. I think in the little bits and pieces when I occasionally tune in, it seems like they would be perfectly happy to really just become the Colbert Report.
Right.
Someone would just let them. But I think they set themselves up as being something different, and now they can't back into it. And that's a tough place for them to be in, and I don't know that they've found what they're supposed to be yet. I think he's talented. I don't like what they're doing enough to watch it regularly, so I tune in every couple of weeks and go, okay, it's still not there, and this was my every couple of weeks, it's still not there moment, yeah. But I was still impressed with how everybody handled what was a tough interview.
Yeah, I agree. And are you watching, well, actually NBC has been off now. Well, it's not that Fallon matters, but
I've been watching nonstop Olympics. NBC has definitely not been off.
Yeah, I know. I know that, but I'm just saying late night stuff. But I don't miss Fallon, but I do miss Myers. I can say that much. But yeah, now, okay. You mentioned the Olympics. How do you feel about the coverage?
It's the same thing NBC does every Olympics, and there's always a reason to complain about it because it's always annoying. And the concentration on only the American athletes, except for when they have to surrender and admit that the Russian figure skating girls are too good to ignore. And then they blow things entirely. Like, there was the one competition where they basically decided the skier had won the event and then came back about 25 minutes later and went, oh, wait, this snowboarder actually won this major event. We kind of didn't tell you that. That was strange. But I've been watching a pretty fair amount of it. They did a good job with getting the organizers in South Korea to put as many events as they could in spots where they could air live in prime time. So there's been some live events, and that's good. And unlike the summer events, there are actually fewer events for me personally that I'm invested in not having spoiled. So that's been good. It's what they do. I like Tara and Johnny and their figure skating coverage. I think they're funny. Yeah. So good enough. And the pageantry of it all. It's all about the pageantry.
Yeah. I've not watched much of the Winter Olympics.
I don't know. Mostly the games have been good enough. I've watched a lot of it. There was the coronation of the various half pipes snowboarders, That was fine. But I am personally not so much a winter sports athlete, and so I don't necessarily understand the rules and regulations of so many of these skiing and snowboarding and whatever events.
Yeah.
Hockey I can do, figure skating I can pretend to do, though even figure skating, when it gets into like ice dancing, I don't know what they're doing. And you've got the brother and sister team, and all I can think is, stop clutching each other that way. It's icky. I have a hard time with the Winter Olympics. I'm not good enough to know what they are.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on a second, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. And we're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll talk more TV with Dan Feinberg, Hollywood reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And the news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. AAA Thursday coming up, so get your requests in. One artist, three songs. Get them. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. We got a Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. And we're going to do a thing called Blind Spots, revisiting pop culture classics that we missed. Never seen an episode of The Sopranos? What? Never heard of The Beatles? Huh? That kind of stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, joining us live is Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can check him out and follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. And let's get back with Dan Feinberg. Hey, Dan.
How you doing?
All right. Welcome back. Now, you contribute to the IndieWire. You contribute frequently to their questions.
Indeed. Their weekly critics polls are one of my opportunities to be snobby every week.
Exactly. Exactly. One of the ones that I wanted to talk to you about was critics pick the best will they or won't they couples on TV. Talk a little bit about that.
This one's a tough one for me because it's just not the way I watch TV. And yet, I know that the world loves watching TV shows to see which couples will and won't end up making out. And I believe that one was tied probably to Valentine's Day. And I think that the answer that I finally came down to when all was said and done was Winnie Cooper and Kevin Arnold on The Wonder Years, because that was a will they or won't they couple that I wanted to happen so much, because Kevin Arnold was my contemporary. He and I were peers, and he loved Winnie Cooper, and I loved Winnie Cooper, and I wanted to believe that if he could end up with Winnie Cooper, I too could end up with Winnie Cooper, and if memory serves, neither one of us has ended up with Winnie Cooper, so at least I don't have to be jealous of him. But yeah, that was the answer I gave. I think I mentioned a few other things. Several of the Josh Schwartz shows have had will they or won't they couples that I got into. I like Seth and Summer on The OC. I liked Chuck and Sarah on Chuck. Those are a couple of good ones. But a lot of the will they or won't they couples that people really get into are couples that I actually have actively hated over the years. Couples like Veronica and Logan on Veronica Mars. You know, so I find that often really kind of grates on me. But yes, I went with Winnie Cooper and Kevin Arnold. Who's your favorite will they or won't they couple, Nick?
It's Sam and Diane. without hesitation. And I also am a big fan of I know you mentioned that you hate him, but I happen to love Gossip Girl, and I loved the whole Blair and Chuck thing, which I thought,
but Chuck is awful.
I love Chuck Bass. He's my favorite character on the show.
But he attempts to de-rape a 14-year-old in the pilot. How do you move on from that?
I know.
Like, sell Blair for a hotel at some point?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he did horrible things.
Chuck Bass is the worst. Anyway.
But Sam and Diane are my favorite, and I also love Jim and Pam from The Office.
No, those are two unquestionable. Yeah. I do not usually ship couples, but Sam and Diane are a classic, and Jim and Pam, especially when they weren't together, and then when they were just starting to be together.
I agree.
As good as it gets.
Yeah, I agree. And it's really fun, because like right now we have a channel. It's actually a nationwide channel called MeTV, which we have here in Chicago. And every Sunday night, they do this thing called Last Laughs for the weekend. And they run a string of sitcoms together, and I usually watch them right before I come down here to work. And it's at 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. is The Honeymooners, 10:30 is The Odd Couple, 11 o'clock is Cheers, 11:30 is Bob Newhart, midnight is Mary Tyler Moore. So it's quite a murderer's row of comedy.
That is a powerhouse assortment of sitcom classics.
Yeah.
And forcing people to remember that TV existed before 1980. So,
yeah, yeah.
Good on MeTV.
Yeah, and I watch it. I usually watch at least two or three of them before I come down to work on Sunday night into Monday morning. And they have just restarted Cheers. And they're going in order. And so it was like episode 4 of the first season last Sunday. Oh, just so great. And that's that dynamic that we're talking about was so strong in the first season of Cheers.
Oh, right from the beginning. Cheers is one of those shows that started strong. That really, it didn't take that long to find what it was. It just became the show that it was.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be a fun thing to do. I've noticed that half the world seems to be watching and making their way through episodes of ER on Hulu, and
yeah.
I kind of wish I could do that. And
yeah.
I have too many new things.
Yeah,
I
know. I'm a sucker for all those shows. I mean, Honeymooners is like my favorite show of all time, and I know like every line of dialogue of the original 39, and so.
Huh.
But anyway, so that's a lot of fun. But Sam and Diane would be my choice in that regard. So
I can totally buy that. I was trying not to. I knew plenty of other people would say Sam and Diane and Jim and Pam. So I tried going elsewhere, and fortunately, plenty of people also did say that. So
okay, all right. Let's move on to another new show. This is from Stephen Colbert. It's an animated show called Our Cartoon President, and he's been doing a few interviews with the cartoon president in the past couple of weeks, obviously to promote the show. And I was not really bowled over by these interviews or the character during those segments.
And let me assure you, if you are not bowled over by that, you will be even less bowled over by the Showtime animated show, Our Cartoon President, which unfortunately is... It's just an illustration, pun intended, of how difficult it is to attempt to do topical current animation. The time lag has just not been eliminated sufficiently unless you are the South Park guys to do it. And so not everyone's going to decide that they want to do the South Park guys, and that's not the style they're going with on Our Cartoon President. And so what they're sacrificing for better animation is... It's just not all that funny, and it's just this strange thing where because of our current president and the way that news cycles basically go a day and then something ridiculous happens the next day, if you have a 3 or 4 month animation lag period, you might as well be talking about the Inquisition. You might as well be talking about the Pilgrims. It's so unconnected with what's actually happening.
Yeah, right, right.
And watching Our Cartoon President feels that way to me. And not only that, it's making all the same jokes that 15 people in late night have been making for, you know, 4 months. And so the choice they've made for the most part is to do something kind of more generic. And it's kind of a workplacey family animated sitcom, but it's not good. Do you remember the Comedy Central series That's My Bush?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Plenty of people don't.
Yeah. No. I'm sorry, but yes, I do because I liked it very much. I watched it all the time.
And honestly, I would have figured probably in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's kind of the model for what a better version, and that was a show that I was very hot and cold on, and probably ultimately more cold on. But what a better version of this is, where you sort of transpose the lives of famous people into conventions of an established sitcom format.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, the Bushes are just a wacky multicam sitcom. Let's play that. And this is kind of the Trumps are just a wacky animated family, and it doesn't really work at all. It's a disappointment because we all know that Stephen Colbert is capable of doing extremely funny things, and the people who are working on the show with him are also extremely funny, and there's just not enough perspective. There's just not enough thought to it to make it worthwhile.
And it's on Showtime for people who are interested. What night does it air, do we know?
It is on Sunday nights. It's partnered with the new season of Homeland, where Carrie is doing her Carrie thing, as she does. That show's just never going to end. So enjoy your Homeland.
I'm not a Homeland guy. I watched the first couple of seasons of it, but I just kind of gave up after a while. I happen to be a massive Damian Lewis fan, and so when he was out, I was like, okay, I don't think I'm going to watch this anymore.
And Damian Lewis has at this exact moment the better of the Showtime dramas.
Yeah.
That Billions is a much more successful show at this current moment.
I agree.
It had its time, but...
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about the phenomenon that is This Is Us post-Super Bowl, and you wrote a little bit about that. What did you write about?
And I am so much in the minority on this one. Everyone just... you know, talking about their sobbing and, this episode broke me and I'm so emotional about Jack's death, which has been teased for 2 full seasons. And me, I'm so relieved that we're done stunting the death of a character as a, you know, event that they've done nothing but talk about. They made this show that was supposed to be a show about how families live into basically a show, how's Jack going to have died?
Right.
And so I found that so obnoxious by the end, and the fact that at least now in theory we're done with it, and the episode that came after, the post-Super Bowl episode, the post-post-Super Bowl episode, rather, was very emotional, and honestly, you know, Sterling K. Brown he's a treasure. I am so looking forward to his Saturday Night Live hosting.
Me too. I can't wait. I think he's going to be great.
He's going to be fantastic, provided they give him things to do, and even if he isn't, he's going to be such a good sport that we're going to love him anyway. You know, I thought he was surprisingly good in Black Panther in what's a really, yeah, really small role, but yeah, he sells the heck out of it.
He does, yes.
So he's always great, but, you know, like Mandy Moore, for me, has been amazing the past couple episodes of This Is Us, and so effective, and it's just so hard for me to always be able to isolate the performances that I love amidst the manipulation of the show, yeah, and I hope that they find a way to just make the show about the characters again, as opposed to this big death mystery, which just never did it for
me. Right. Now, you mentioned SNL. I just want to mention, you know, obviously I watch it every week, and it's not coming back until next week. And who's the host next week?
I knew who it was.
Okay, it's Sterling K. Brown, and then Bill Hader is the last. And but it was I can't remember who it was. Or who it is. I've obviously been watching it, and I have to say, have you been watching, Dan?
Yep, I am. I am all caught up on that one,
okay,
too.
Heidi Gardner, wow, the standout, without question, the standout of the new cast members.
Well, of the new cast members, that is absolutely and completely true. No question, because I don't think they know what to do with Chris Redden.
Yeah, I know, and he's great. He's funny as hell, but he's, you know, they're kind of sticking him into things that aren't very good. But, boy, has she stepped out. That bit that she did as the boxer, every boxer's wife in every boxing movie, Angel, on Weekend Update, was one of the funniest things. I've watched it 900 times. I'm going to take my kids to my sister's. I just think it's the funniest thing. I don't know why. It just kills me. I think she's great. She's doing amazing character work. She's absolutely my new favorite cast member.
I think she's great, and I think they understand that. I think that they get that. I continue to be perplexed why the show is the Mikey Day show.
And, I know.
And I don't really know why that is, other than that obviously Lorne Michaels likes him, but it's been a lot of him, and so I don't know. But yes, Heidi Gardner is the star. Chris Redd deserves better material, and then there's that third guy who hasn't really done anything. I feel like he was actually in a sketch.
He was.
One of the last episodes.
He was in. His name is Luke Null, and he was in a sketch where he was late for class. He was terrible. It was a terrible sketch, and he's shown up here and there. It's Charles Barkley next week.
Charles Barkley with the Migos. So
right.
That's going to be fun.
That's going to be a good show. All right, Dan. Always a pleasure, man. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
We will see how much of my DVR I've put up. Yes. But I fear that the answer is not. Now, quick question before I go.
Yeah.
Have you watched Everything Sucks yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, that's just sort of adding to the list because there's just too much stuff to watch. But it's really entertaining, and if you plug through it, it starts off kind of as a somewhat unnecessary 90s high school pastiche and a lot of 90s references. But it gets better and better as it goes along.
Cool. I will give it a watch. And also, before we get out of here, I watched The End of the F'n World, and I loved it.
Okay. It is The End of the Bleeping World is significantly better than Everything Sucks, and you're going to find yourself comparing them inevitably. Give it to halfway through the season, and you start seeing how Everything Sucks is its own show.
Okay.
And it's nicely emotional and funny, and it feels real and honest.
I will definitely give it a watch. All right, Dan, thanks very much, buddy.
Talk to you later.
All right, talk to you in a couple of weeks. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N.